thought we might like to do a little sightseeing.
Sightseeing?
Han echoed suspiciously. Lando was practically glowing with innocence, a look he almost never used except when he was trying to sucker someone into something.
You mean as in flying all over the galaxy looking for replacement mole miners?
Han, Lando protested, looking hurt now. Are you suggesting I'd stoop so low as to try and con you into helping me run my business?
Forgive me,
Han said, trying not to sound too sarcastic.
I forgot. You're respectable now. So what sights are we going to see?
Well,
casually Lando leaned back and laced his fingers together behind his head.
You mentioned earlier that you hadn't been able to get in touch with Talon Card. I thought we might take another crack at it.
Han frowned at him.
You're serious?
Why not? You want cargo ships and you want a good slicer. Card can supply both.
I don't need a slicer anymore, Han said. Leia's as safe now as she's ever likely to be, remember?
Sure, until someone leaks the news that she's there, Lando countered. I don't think the Wookiees would, but there are non-Wookiee traders flying in and out of Kashyyyk all the time. All it takes is one person spotting her, and you'll be right back where you were when you first got here.
He cocked an eyebrow.
And Card might also have something on this mysterious Imperial commander who's been running you in circles lately.
The commander who was almost certainly also the man behind the attacks on Leia.
You know how to make contact with Card?
Not directly, but I know how to get to his people. And I thought that as long as we had 3PO and his umpteen million languages aboard anyway, we'd just go ahead and cut a new contact path.
That'll take time.
Not as much as you might think, Lando assured him. Besides, a new path will cover our trail better. Yours and mine both.
Han grimaced, but Lando was right. And with Leia safely hidden away, at least for now, they could afford to play it cautious.
All right, he said. Assuming we don't wind up playing tag with a Star Destroyer or two.
Right, Lando agreed soberly. The last thing we want is to draw the Imperials onto Card's tail. We've got enough enemies out there as it is.
He tapped the ship's intercom switch.
3PO, you there?
Of course,
Leia's voice returned.
Come on up here, Lando told the droid. Time for your debut performance.
The command room was filled with sculptures instead of pictures this time, over 100 of them, lining the walls in holographic niches, as well as scattered around the floor on ornate pedestals. The variety, as Pellion had come to expect, was astonishing, ranging from human-style chunks of simple stone and wood to others that were more like tethered living creatures than works of art. Each was illuminated by a hazy globe of light, giving sharp contrast to the darkness of the spaces between them.
Admiral?
Pellion called uncertainly, trying to see around the artwork and through the gloom.
Come in, Captain.
Thrawn's coolly modulated voice beckoned. Over at the command chair, just above the hazy white of the Grand Admiral's uniform, two glowing red slits appeared.
You have something?
Yes, sir.
Pellion told him, walking to the console ring and handing a data card over it.
One of our probes in the outer Athega system has picked up Skywalker. And his companions.
And his companions?
Thrawn echoed thoughtfully. He took the data card, inserted it, and for a minute watched the replay in silence.
Interesting, he murmured. Interesting indeed. What's that third ship? The one maneuvering to link with the Millennium Falcon's dorsal hatch.
We've tentatively identified it as the Lady Luck,
Pellion said.
Administrator Lando Calrissian's personal ship. One of the other probes copied a transmission stating that Calrissian was leaving Niklon on a purchasing trip.
Do we know that Calrissian did, in fact, board the ship at Niklon?
No, sir. Not for certain. We can try to get that information, though.
Unnecessary, Thrawn said. Our enemies are clearly past the stage of such childish tricks.
Thrawn pointed to the display, where the Millennium Falcon and the Lady Luck were now joined together.
Observe, Captain, their strategy. Captain Solo and his wife and probably the Wookiee Chewbacca board their ship on Niklon, while Calrissian similarly boards his. They fly to the outer Rathiga system, and there they make a switch.
Pelion frowned.
But we've...
Shh! Thrawn cut him off sharply, holding up a finger for silence, his eyes on the display. Pelion watched, too, as absolutely nothing happened. After a few minutes, the two ships separated, maneuvering carefully away from each other.
Excellent, Thrawn said, freezing the frame. 4:53. They're in a hurry, of course, locked together so vulnerably. Which means...
His forehead furrowed in concentration, then cleared.
Three people,
he said, a touch of satisfaction in his voice.
Three people transferred in one direction or the other between those two ships. Yes, sir,
Pelion nodded, wondering how in the Empire the Grand Admiral had figured that one out.
At any rate, we know that Leia Organa Solo remained aboard the Millennium Falcon.
Do we?
Thrawn asked, lazily polite.
Do we indeed?
I believe we do, sir, yes,
Pelion said, quietly insistent. The Grand Admiral hadn't seen the entire playback, after all.
Right after the Lady Luck and Skywalker's X-Wing left, we intercepted a transmission from her that definitely originated from the Millennium Falcon.
Thrawn shook his head.
A recording, he said, his voice leaving no room for argument. No, they're cleverer than that. A voice print doctor droid, then.
Probably Skywalker's 3PO protocol droid.
Leia Organa Solo, you see, was one of the two people who left with the Lady Luck.
Pelion looked at the display.
I don't understand.
Consider the possibilities, Thrawn said, leaning back in his chair and steepling his fingers in front of him. Three people start out aboard the Millennium Falcon, one aboard the Lady Luck. Three people then transfer, but neither Solo nor Calrissian is the type to turn his ship over to the dubious command of a computer or droid. So each ship must end up with at least one person aboard. You follow so far?
Yes, sir,
Pelion said.
That doesn't tell us who is where, though.
Patience, Captain, Thrawn interrupted him. Patience. As you say, the question now is that of the final makeup of the crews. Fortunately, once we know there were three transfers, there are only two possible combinations. Either Solo and Organa Solo are together aboard the Lady Luck, or else Organa Solo and the Wookiee are there.
Unless one of the transfers was a droid,
Pelion pointed out.
Unlikely. Thrawn shook his head.
Historically, Solo has never liked droids, nor allowed them to travel aboard his ship except under highly unusual circumstances. Skywalker's droid and its astromech counterpart appear to be the sole exceptions, and thanks to your transmission data, we already know that that droid has remained on the Millennium Falcon.
Yes, sir,
Pelion said, not entirely convinced, but knowing better than to argue the point.
Shall I put out an alert on the Lady Luck, then?
That won't be necessary,
Thrawn said, and this time the satisfaction came through clearly.
I know exactly where Leia Organa Solo is going.
Pelion stared at him.
You're not serious, sir.
Perfectly serious, Captain,
Thrawn said evenly.
Consider, Solo and Organa Solo have nothing to gain by simply transferring together to the Lady Luck. The Millennium Falcon is faster and far better defended. This exercise only makes sense if Organa Solo and the Wookiee are together.
Thrawn smiled up at Pelion.
And given that, there is only one logical place for them to go.
Pelion looked at the display, feeling slightly sandbagged, but the Grand Admiral's logic tracked clean.
Kashyyyk?
Kashyyyk, Thrawn confirmed. They know they can't evade our Nogri forever, and so they've decided to surround her with Wookiees, for all the good it will do them.
Pelion felt his lip twitch. He'd been aboard one of the ships that had been sent to Kashyyyk to capture Wookiees for the Empire slave trade.
It may not be as easy as it sounds, Admiral,
he cautioned.
Kashyyyk's ecology can best be described as a layered death trap, and the Wookiees themselves are extremely capable fighters.
So are the Nogri, Thrawn countered coldly. Now, what of Skywalker?
His vector away from Athego was consistent with a course toward Jomark,
Pelion told him.
Of course, he could easily have altered it once he was out of range of our probes.
He's going there, Thrawn said, lip twisting in a tight smile. Our Jedi Master has said so, hasn't he?
The Grand Admiral glanced at the chrono on his display board.
We'll leave for Jomark immediately. How much lead time will we have?
A minimum of 4 days, assuming that Skywalker's X-Wing hasn't been overly modified. More than that, depending on how many stopovers he has to make on the way.
He'll make no stopovers, Thrawn said. Jedi use a hibernation state for trips of such length. For our purposes, though, 4 days will be quite adequate.
He straightened in his chair and touched a switch. The command room's lights came back up, the holographic sculptures fading away.
We'll need 2 more ships, he told Pelion. An interdictor cruiser to bring Skywalker out of hyperspace where we want him, and some kind of freighter. An expendable one, preferably.
Pelion blinked.
Expendable, sir?
Expendable, Captain. We're going to set up the attack as a pure accident. An opportunity that will seem to have arisen while we were investigating a suspicious freighter for Rebellion munitions.
He cocked an eyebrow.
That way, you see, we retain the option of turning him over to Sabaoth if we choose to do so, without even Skywalker realizing he was actually ambushed.
Understood, sir,
Pelion said.
With your permission, I'll get the Chimera underway.
He turned to go, and paused. Halfway across the room, one of the sculptures had not disappeared with the others. Sitting all alone in its globe of light, it slowly writhed on its pedestal like a wave in some bizarre alien ocean.
Yes, Thrawn said from behind him. That one is indeed real.
It's, very interesting,
Pelion managed. The sculpture was strangely hypnotic.
Isn't it?
Thrawn agreed, his voice sounding almost wistful.
It was my one failure out on the fringes. The one time when understanding a race's art gave me no insight at all into its psyche. At least not at the time. Now I believe I'm finally beginning to understand them.
I'm sure that will prove useful in the future,
Pelion offered diplomatically.
I doubt it,
Thrawn said in that same wistful voice.
I wound up destroying their world.
Pelion swallowed.
Yes, sir,
he said, starting again for the door. He winced only a little as he passed the sculpture.
Chapter 16.
There was no dreaming in the Jedi hibernation trance. No dreaming, no consciousness, virtually no awareness of the outside world. It was very much like a coma, in fact, except for one interesting anomaly. Despite the absence of true consciousness, Luke's time sense still somehow managed to function. He didn't understand it exactly, but it was something he'd learned to recognize and use. It was that time sense, coupled with R2's frantic gurgling in the foggy distance, that was his first hint something was wrong.
All right, R2, I'm awake,
he reassured the droid, as he worked his way back toward consciousness. Blinking the gummy feelings out of his eyes, he gave the instruments a quick scan. The readings confirmed what his time sense had already told him. The X-Wing had come out of hyperspace nearly 20 light-years short of Jomark. The proximity indicator registered 2 ships practically on top of him ahead, with a third off to one side in the distance. Still blinking, he raised his head for a look, and with a rush of adrenaline came fully awake. Directly ahead of him was what looked like a light freighter, a blazing overload in its engine section visible through crumpled and half-vaporized hull plates. Beyond it, looming like a dark cliff face, was an Imperial Star Destroyer.
Anger, fear, aggression,
The dark side of the Force, are they?
With an effort, Luke forced down his fear. The freighter was between him and the Star Destroyer. Concentrating on their larger prey, the Imperials might not even have noticed his arrival.
Let's get out of here, R2, he said, keying the controls back to manual and swinging the X-Wing hard around. The etheric rudder whined in protest with the turn.
Unidentified starfighter,
a harsh voice boomed from the speaker.
This is the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera. Transmit your identification code and state your business.
So much for hoping he wouldn't be noticed. In the distance now, Luke could see what it was that had yanked the X-Wing out of hyperspace. The third ship was an interdictor cruiser, the Empire's favorite tool for keeping opponents from jumping to light speed. Obviously, they'd been lying in wait for the freighter. It was just as bad luck that he'd run across the interdictor's projected mass shadow and been kicked out of hyperspace along with it. The freighter. Closing his eyes briefly with concentration, Luke reached out with the Force, trying to discover whether it was a Republic ship, a neutral, or even a pirate that the Chimera had caught. But there was no hint of any life aboard. Either the crew had escaped, or else they'd already been taken prisoner. Either way, there was nothing Luke could do for them now.
R2, find me the nearest edge of that interdictor's gravity wave cone, he ordered, throwing the X-Wing into a stomach-churning downward drop that even the acceleration compensator couldn't quite handle. If he could keep the freighter directly between him and the Star Destroyer, he might be able to get out of range before they could bring a tractor beam to bear.
Unidentified starfighter,
the harsh voice was starting to get angry.
I repeat, transmit your identification code or prepare to be detained.
Should have brought one of Han's false ID codes with me, Luke muttered to himself. R2, where's that edge estimate?
The droid beeped, and a diagram appeared on the computer scope.
That far, huh? Luke murmured. Well, nothing to do but go for it. Hang on.
Unidentified starfighter!
The rest of the harangue was drowned out by the roar of the drive as Luke abruptly kicked the ship to full power. Almost lost in the noise was R2's questioning trilling.
No! I want the deflector shields down! Luke shouted back. We need the extra speed!
He didn't add that if the Star Destroyer was really serious about vaporizing them, the presence or absence of shields wouldn't matter much at this range anyway. But R2 probably already knew that. But if the Imperials didn't seem interested in vaporizing him out of hand, neither were they willing to just let him go. On the rear scope, he could see the Star Destroyer moving up and over the damaged freighter, trying to get clear of its interference. Luke threw a quick look at the proximity indicator. He was still within tractor beam range, and at their current relative speeds would remain so for the next couple of minutes. What he needed was some way to distract or blind them.
R2, I need a fast reprogramming on one of the proton torpedoes, he called. I want to drop it at 0 Delta 5, then have it turn around and head straight aft. No sensors or homing codes either. I want it to go out cold. Can you do that?
There was an affirmative beep.
Good. As soon as it's ready, give me a warning and then let it go.
He turned his attention back to the rear scope, gave the X-Wing's course a slight readjustment. With its guidance sensors in their normal active state, the torpedo would be subject to the Star Destroyer's impressive array of jamming equipment. Going out cold like this would limit the Imperial's response to trying to shoot it down with laser fire. The flip side of that, of course, was that if it wasn't aimed very accurately, it would shoot right past its intended target without even a twitch. R2 beeped, and with a slight lurch, the torpedo was away. Luke watched it go, reaching out with the Force to give it a slight realignment tap. And a second later, with a spectacular multiple flash of sympathetic detonations, the freighter blew up. Luke looked at the proximity indicator, mentally crossing his fingers. Almost out of range now. If the debris from the freighter could screen off the tractor beam for a few more seconds, they should make it. R2 warbled a warning. Luke glanced at the translation, then at the long-range scope, and felt his stomach tighten. R2 warbled again, more insistently this time.
I see it, R2, Luke growled.
It was, of course, the obvious tactic for the Imperials to employ. With the freighter no longer of any interest whatsoever, the interdictor was changing position,
swinging around to try to bring its huge gravity field projectors more fully to bear on the escaping X-Wing. Luke watched as the cone-shaped field area angled across the scope. "Hang on, R2!" he called, and again, too abruptly for the compensators to totally negate, he swung the X-Wing into a right-angle turn, blasting laterally to their original course. From behind him came a shocked screech. "Quiet, R2! I know what I'm doing!" he told the droid. Off to starboard now, the Star Destroyer was belatedly trying to shift its massive bulk, pivoting to track Luke's maneuver. And for the first time since the beginning of the encounter, flashes of laser fire began lancing out. Luke made a quick decision. Speed alone wasn't going to save him now, and a near miss could end the contest right here and now. "Deflectors up, R2!" he instructed the droid, giving his full attention to his best evasive maneuvering. "Give me a balance between shield power and speed." R2 beeped a response, and there was a slight drop in engine noise as the shields began drawing power. They were going slower, but so far the gamble seemed to be working. Caught off balance by Luke's right-angle maneuver, the interdictor was now rotating in the wrong direction, its gravity beam sweeping across Luke's previous course instead of tracking the current one. Its commander was obviously trying to correct that mistake, but the sheer inertia of the ship's massive gravity generators was on Luke's side. If he could stay out of the Star Destroyer's range for another few seconds, he'd be out of the beam and free to escape to hyperspace. "Stand by for light speed," he told R2. "Don't worry about direction. We can do a short hop and set things up more carefully once we're clear." R2 acknowledged, and without warning, Luke was slammed hard against his harness. The Star Destroyer's tractor beam had them. R2 shrilled in dismay, but Luke had no time to comfort the droid now. His straight-line course had suddenly become an arc, a sort of pseudo-orbit, with the Star Destroyer playing the role of planet at its center. Unlike a true orbit, though, this one wasn't stable, and as soon as the Imperials got another beam focused on him, the circle would quickly degenerate into a tight inward spiral, a spiral whose endpoint would be inside the Star Destroyer's hangar bay. He dropped the shields, throwing full power once again to the drive, knowing full well it was most likely a futile gesture. And he was right. For a second, the beam seemed to falter, but it quickly caught back up with him. Such a relatively minor change in speed was too small to follow up the beam's tracking equipment. But if he could find a way to arrange a more major change in speed...
"Unidentified starfighter,"
the harsh voice was back, unmistakably gloating this time.
"You have no chance of escape. Further efforts will merely damage your vehicle. You are ordered to power down and prepare to dock."
Luke clenched his teeth. This was going to be dangerous, but he'd run out of choices. And he'd had heard stories of this working at least once before. Somewhere. "R2, we're going to try something tricky," he called to the droid. "On my signal, I want you to reverse trigger the acceleration compensator. Full power. And bypass the cutoffs if you have to." Something warbled from the control panel, and he risked a quick look at the scope. His curving arc had brought him right to the edge of the interdictor's gravity projection. "R2, now!" And with a scream of horribly stressed electronics, the X-Wing came to a sudden dead stop. There wasn't even enough time for Luke to wonder what aboard his ship could possibly have made a scream like that before he was again thrown, even harder this time, against his harness. His thumbs, ready on the firing buttons, jabbed down hard, sending a pair of proton torpedoes lancing forward. Simultaneously, he pulled the X-Wing upward. The Star Destroyer's tractor beam, tracking him along his path, had momentarily gotten lost by his sudden maneuver. If the computers guiding that lock would now be considerate enough to latch onto the proton torpedoes instead of him... And suddenly, the torpedoes were gone, leaving behind only a wisp of their exhaust trail to show that they'd been snatched off their original course. The gamble had succeeded. The Star Destroyer was now steadily pulling in the wrong target. "We're free!" he snapped to R2, throwing full power to the drive. "Get ready for light speed!" The droid trilled something, but Luke had no time to look down at the computer scope for the translation. Realizing their error and recognizing there was insufficient time to re-establish a tractor lock, the Imperials had apparently decided to go for a straight kill.
All the Star Destroyer's batteries seemed to open up at once, and Luke suddenly found himself trying to dodge a virtual sandstorm of laser fire. Forcing himself to relax, he let the Force flow through him, allowing it to guide his hands on the controls the way it did his lightsaber. The ship jumped once as a shot got through. In his peripheral vision, he saw the tip of his dorsal starboard laser cannon flash and disappear into a cloud of superheated plasma. A near miss burned past overhead. Another, closer, scorched a line across the transparasteel canopy. Another warble came from the scope. They were clear of the interdictor's gravity shadow. Go! Luke shouted to R2, and with a second, even more nerve-wrenching electronic scream from behind him, the sky ahead abruptly turned to star lines. They made it. For what seemed like a small eternity, Thrawn gazed out the viewport, staring at the spot where Skywalker's X-Wing had been when it had vanished. Surreptitiously, Pellion watched him, wondering tautly when the inevitable explosion would come. With half an ear, he listened to the damage control reports coming from the number 4 tractor beam projector, carefully not getting himself involved with the cleanup. The destruction of one of the Chimera's 10 projectors was a relatively minor loss. Skywalker's escape was not. Thrawn stirred and turned around. Pellion tensed.
Come with me, Captain, the Grand Admiral said quietly, striding away down the bridge command walkway.
Yes, sir,
Pellion murmured, falling into step behind him, the stories of how Darth Vader had dealt with subordinates' failures running through his mind. The bridge was uncommonly quiet as Thrawn led the way to the aft stairway and descended into the starboard crew pit. He walked past the crewers at their consoles, past the officers standing painfully erect behind them, and came to a halt at the control station for the starboard tractor beams.
Your name?
He said, his voice excruciatingly calm.
Chris Pieterson, sir,
the young man seated at the console answered, his eyes wary.
You were in charge of the tractor beam during our engagement with the starfighter.
It was a statement, not a question.
Yes, sir, but what happened wasn't my fault.
Thrawn's eyebrows arched just a bit. Explain. Pieterson started to gesture to the side, changed his mind in mid-motion.
The target did something with his acceleration compensator that killed his velocity vector, and...
I'm aware of the facts, Thrawn cut in. I'm waiting to hear why his escape wasn't your fault.
I was never properly trained for such an occurrence, sir,
Pieterson said, a flicker of defiance touching his eyes.
The computer lost the lock, but seemed to pick it up again right away. There was no way for me to know it had really picked up something else until...
Until the proton torpedoes detonated against the projector?
Pieterson held his gaze evenly.
Yes, sir.
For a long moment, Thrawn studied him.
Who is your officer?
He asked at last. Pieterson's eyes shifted to the right.
Ensign Coclosure, sir.
Slowly, deliberately, Thrawn turned to the tall man, standing rigidly at attention with his back to the walkway.
You are in charge of this man?
Coclosure swallowed visibly.
Yes, sir,
he said.
Was his training also your responsibility?
Yes, sir,
Coclosure said again.
Did you, during that training, run through any scenarios similar to what just happened?
I don't remember, sir,
the ensign admitted.
The standard training package does include scenarios concerning loss of lock and subsequent re-establishment confirmation.
Thrawn threw a brief glance back down at Pieterson. Did you recruit him as well, ensign?
No, sir. He was a conscript.
Does that make him less worthy of your training time than a normal enlistee?
No, sir.
Colclosure's eyes flickered to Pieterson.
I've always tried to treat my subordinates equally.
I see.
Thrawn considered for a moment, then half turned to look past Pellion's shoulder.
Rook?
Pellion started as Rook brushed silently past him. He hadn't realized the Nogri had followed them down. Thrawn waited until Rook was standing at his side, then turned back to Coclosure.
Do you know the difference between an error and a mistake, Ensign? The entire bridge had gone deathly still. Colclosure swallowed again, his face starting to go pale.
No, sir.
Anyone can make an error, Ensign. But that error doesn't become a mistake until you refuse to correct it. He raised a finger, and almost lazily, pointed. Pelion never even saw Rook move. Pietersen certainly never had time to scream. From farther down the crew pit came the sound of someone trying valiantly not to be sick. Thrawn glanced over Pelion.